like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box, the pre-Anzac Day edition. It does appear that as we are going to air, Molly, that the Essendon drug drama is coming to a head. I suppose it was always going to be based around Anzac Day. Of course, that's the biggest day of the Essendon home and away year, and it does seem like things are coming to a head, but I suppose it's too early to talk about fantasy implications. We just need to wait for the story to come out and to see whether it's actually going to impact on the playing group. We just don't know that yet, I suppose.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it can can absolutely affect them if they've got players who are going to be suspended if that is the case, and we're not saying it is, but there are some reports that might be the case. So, we're going to have to, as you say, wait and see what happens and ride from there.
All right. Well, anyway, let's start from the beginning. My name is Monty. The other voice you were hearing is Molly, and we are talking fantasy football, specifically AFL Dream Team and Supercoach fantasy football, the salary cap versions of these competitions. And I think they're also having match day this weekend. Is that right, Molly? I believe there's the AFL match day competition is happening. And, of course, with stadium fantasy sport, there's match day every match. And I believe there's other ones waiting in the wings. The match day stuff, we don't talk about it much here on the show, Molly, but it is... You look at the numbers that Stadium is actually giving out. They're actually giving out thousands of dollars every week, and I'm not sure there's a whole lot of competition for these prizes. I mean, if you're looking for a quick buck, that actually might be the best. I mean, I'm not getting paid to say this, by the way, but that might actually be the best way to get a big quick buck out of fantasy sports is to get on board these match day versions of the game.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into the Stadium offering at all to see what it was. They are advertising it quite heavily on every medium they can. It's an interesting one. Do you pay for it or is it free?
It is free. I mean, it is not possible to actually charge for fantasy sports in Victoria, especially due to the way that the gambling laws have been framed, which is fair enough. There is possibility, I think we've talked on the show before, several years ago, about the way that they have it structured in the US around the Vegas bookmakers and or whatever the bookies they have over there, and they have a world championship of fantasy football, which where it's a bit like the world championship of poker, where you have a buy-in and there's $1 million prize at the end of it. So nothing like that is possible here. It's all promotional based, and so it's all free entry, and thus. It is a bit hard to figure out how Stadium are going to make their money, but, I mean, you know, while they're giving out money, then it's worthwhile putting your hat in the ring to see if you can actually get some of it.
Yeah, why not, hey?
Of course, as I said, so the AFL Dream Team, well, under the AFL Fantasy umbrella, it's not a Dream Team game as such, it's under AFL Fantasy, the AFL Fantasy Match Day competition is the other one that's coming, and I have been told about some other ones that are coming down the pipeline, and I'm sure that part of the game is going to become more and more popular as people get into the casual game rather than the year-long commitment, as seems to be the way of things these days. I wasn't getting paid for any of that, but something I am going to get paid for is the next little item, Molly. We are going to give away a cap from Capstar, who are a Fan Footy sponsor, and I haven't actually talked with you about this, Molly, but we need to ask them a question, and the first person to answer the question on the Coach's Box chat will win a Capstar cap. Now, we have five possible teams, of which we have New Era AFL Snapback Hats. So if you are a St Kilda, Eagles, Blues, Cats or Crows fan, you'll want to win this prize because you have a choice of one of those five teams. Molly, I haven't put you up to this. Now, can you think of a fantasy-relevant question that we could answer. We could ask these guys, and hopefully there'd be one that people would know. Because if we ask one and they don't know, don't know about that. But can you think of one?
How about? Do we just make it easy? Something like who is the leading Dream Team player for this year? Maybe. How about that?
Oh, I'd have to actually look that up.
By average,
I'd actually have to look that up. There you go. I'll have to look up my FF Genie to get that fairly quickly. Of course, there are many ways of looking up stats as this FF Genie, as I said, that is a Java app. You can look up Too Serious. You can probably look up somewhere in FanFooty. I'm sure I've got that in a table somewhere. You can look at FootyY. There's many, many places you can look at these things, probably in FootyStar. And now I need to look at the mean. And... oh, there's a name I wasn't expecting to see at the top of that number. There you go.
We're expecting number two either.
No, well, Heavy is the winner because even though he didn't quite spell it correctly, he did get Kane Corns is actually the top scorer in Dream Team by average, 129.75 across the first four rounds. And actually, he and Justin Westhoff were the top two there, so only a couple of points separating them. So, Heavy, I will get your details afterwards, and we shall send you a cap of some description. So, as I said, the link to the cap that he did win, and hopefully we'll be able to give away one of those next week. And I think we might actually ban Heavy from the competition next week. We wouldn't want him to win two of them. Cause
no.
Unless he's got two heads. Heavy, are you from Tasmania?
Tasmanian?
Yeah, that's right. No. The obvious joke. We always go for the obvious jokes here at the coaches.
We do. Because they're obvious.
Indeed. Now, let us get to the round review, Molly. We have a list of players every week we go through. We try to talk about at least one player from every team in the round review. And, of course, we are looking not only about the performances in the round just gone, but also their future prospects. And the first player we've got to talk about from the Sydney and Geelong game on the Friday night, Molly, is Tony Armstrong. Now, this is a player who I'm not sure has ever been fantasy relevant before. We have talked about him in previous shows, but I suppose the reason why I am bringing him up, despite the fact that he's only averaging 44 this year, is that he did get a 67 in Dream Team and 77 in Supercoach on the weekend. And he and Dane Rampey are the two players I want to speak about from Sydney. Now, Lewis Roberts Thompson was dropped this week because he was injured, which does indicate to me that Rampey has a little bit more job security. Armstrong is keeping the formidable and estimable Richard Tambling out of the side, Molly, and he is actually getting a game despite the fact that Mattner and Malcheski and who's the other one, Nick Smith, are in the side. Is it Armstrong out when Reece Shaw gets fit? Is that the equation? And then Rampey is done for when Roberts Thompson comes back? Or what are the job security of these two?
Well, is Robert Thompson expected back? I mean, he had a knee, didn't he?
He had a knee, that's right.
So, I don't know whether Rampey's really playing in Robert Thompson's position, so... I don't know that either of them are worried about that, but I mean, I think both of those guys have to worry about Shaw's return affecting their job security, and but then again, there are other you know, chances that there'll be injuries to other players and the like. So
that's true. Like, I mean, the likes of Malcheski is certainly, you know, they do get injured on a regular basis.
Yeah, so I think Armstrong's probably the safer of the two, but whether he's fantasy relevant, you know, I don't think his score is going to be bumped that much by Roberts Thompson going out. So
I was looking at Armstrong, I mean, figuring out whether we should even talk about him at all, and I suppose in the first game of the year he played, he was coming off a vest, but you look at that game, the second game he played against the Roos, he didn't get vested, and he still only managed 44 in Dream Team and 59 in Supercoach. But so, I mean, is his average across the season going to be closer to that 44 he got in the second game, or is it going to be closer to the 67 he got in the Geelong game?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle there, I think, is where he would be for the year. He might have some good games, but he'll also have some vested games and some bad games. So, Yeah, I'm not that confident in his ability. And being a mid-price player, he is a center. Oh, I think he's a back, isn't he?
Yes.
So, you know, I think the value of the rookies that we've already got is probably better to hang on to them and try and get through to upgrade them straight to premiums.
And as far as Rampy goes, he is on the bubble this week, which is why he's fantasy relevant. But I get the feeling there are going to be a few more backs coming down the line in the next couple of weeks who will be on the bubble in future. I mean, Vlastuin, who I'm not sure we've got him on the list today, but he, of course, is likely to get picked this week. So I feel like he's the one who, I mean, we're going to be wanting to get the likes of Pittard and Stevenson and Heath out in a couple of weeks. Maybe the likes of, we'll talk about a few rookie backs who might have peaked already. I mean, would you go someone like a Luke Brown to a Dane Rampy, or is there just not enough upside there?
Yeah, Rampy's a mid, so...
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well,
there's a few of those. I mean, a guy we'll talk about in a minute who, you know, I can't believe is a mid. So, you know, I think there's a few of those. You know, maybe it's a factor of the increased number of midfield spots in teams. They had to be a bit more... push a few more guys towards the mid part of the ground than the back. So, yeah, no, as a rookie in the mids, I don't think he's a good choice at all. And most of the back rookies that we have are still firing anyway. Even if he was a back, I still wouldn't like his chances compared to some of the other guys we've still got.
All right, on the Geelong side of that game, the Sydney-Geelong game on the Friday night, Harry Taylor, his role has been trumpeted in various media outlets. I think he was even mentioned on Footy Classified, which doesn't normally do a whole lot of footy, straight or pure footy analysis. But they certainly highlighted, and it has been highlighted elsewhere, how Taylor is a switch player now, and the player he is switching with is James Podsiadly. Now, I'm not sure Podsiadly's numbers are enough to get salary cap players interested, but Taylor's might, because he has registered tons in both competitions in the last 2 weeks. Now, coming off around 231 and 44 in either competition, but since then, tons in both competitions, and it was very noticeable how that structure of Podsiadly covering for Taylor, so Taylor being the one who initiates the switch, and Podsiadly just does what Taylor wants him to do, so Taylor is able to kick goals, you know, to mark and kick goals from centre half back, and that's what he's done the last couple of weeks to get him up to those numbers. Now, is that sustainable, Molly? Do you think? Well, what do you think the opposition analysts are going to? They're going to look at that obviously and think, well, we need to do something to quell that. Does that mean they put a certain type of player on Taylor to stop that? How do opposition coaches stop that? And I mean, is he going to keep on doing that for the foreseeable future?
Oh, I've got a lot of respect for Harry Taylor as his marking ability and the like. So I think they are going to have to play a good backman on him, but they would do that anyway. That'd have to be their second best backman because this is when he moves forward because they've already got Hawkins. So there is the case where teams haven't got a very strong forward line with tools that could be the case. But I'm just looking at his run over the next 4 weeks. And although he's got a game where he probably isn't going to be stretched in the back line against the Bulldogs, then he comes up against Richmond, Essendon and Collingwood, you know, three sides that have got at least two forwards who are tall forwards who are...
To be picked up.
So, absolutely. I think those three teams are three teams that you're not going to see him switch against.
Mm. It is interesting looking at that draw because, of course, after those three teams you mentioned, ending with Collingwood in round 8, he's got Port, Gold Coast, and GWS, which is obviously a nice little run there, and then the Lions after the bye. So, that's a. I mean, we are looking a lot at draws at this stage, and I guess we'll be going through a bunch of other teams' draws to look for value and upside. So that's another one. So Also, on the Geelong side, Molly, an underrated player. This is his numbers are similar to Taylor's because he also had a quiet start to the season, but has registered tons in both competitions in the last 2 weeks, and that's Matthew Stokes. Now, he has played most of his career, well, pretty much all of his career as a small forward, but he's been lining up on the wing in recent games, and that is the key to unlocking his DT upside, and certainly in the Carlton game, 120s in both competitions and 100s in the Sydney game, and scoring 100 in Dream Team or Supercoach against Sydney is no mean feat, especially for what you might call a middle-ranking player such as Stokes. But he is playing fairly outside as a wingman, but his average across four games is at least 10 greater than he has sustained in any full season so far. So he hasn't actually played more than 19 games in a season, it should be pointed out. That may be job security rather than fitness issues. But I know in this world, especially in Dream Team, where you have these two trades to burn every week, is it worth going up to someone like a Stokes? Because you'd spend a little bit more money and you get someone who you know is a rolled gold premium. But I get the feeling a lot of fantasy coaches, myself included, are going to be making the choice between the absolute premiums who you're paying top dollar for and these underpriced players who you would hope maybe would be able to make the grade as a top six back or forward or a top eight midfielder. But is Stokes going to get anywhere near that across the whole season?
I don't think he'll be able to maintain the top level, but he's had such a good season. I mean, you mentioned two tons, but, you know, his first game was a 98. So, and then the 60, you know, with limited time off the subs, it wasn't like he came on in the first quarter for an injury. He came on, I think, in the third quarter and put on 60 in that time. So, I think there is some, you know, it's really tricky, but I think there is some, you know, a level of risk that you could take on backing him into average 100 for the year. You can still get him a little bit under, you know, if he can average near that 100. What that price should be now, and you know that's something you could move you forward a long way, or you know even if you picked him up until around his buy time, that could be not a bad move either.
It is interesting the way that the Geelong small forwards have been used. Obviously, Motlop is really the only high small forward who stays there for pretty much all the game. They have been rotating blokes like Christensen and Duncan through there. Duncan plays a lot of half-forward flank, but he does obviously rotate through the midfield, as all half-forward flanks do. So the roles that Stokes might have played in previous years are now being taken by those young blokes I mentioned. So there's a bit of Hall and Smith doing a bit of that as well, and maybe Taylor Hunt even rotating through there. So that does leave Stokes to be that outside wing player. It's an interesting shift in philosophy of using Stokes. It probably suits his game, and at the moment it suits Geelong because obviously they're 4-0 on the back of moves like that. Now, getting to the Hawthorn Fremantle game, Molly, we need to engage in a bit more Hawk talk. Now, I have been hearing a lot of discussion this week amongst fantasy coaches about Grant Birchall, and this is something I hear every year about some player or another at this point of time, that they have to get him. He's just scoring too heavily. You have to get on board. Mostly, I mean, I suppose the signature example of this was Brent Stanton. He seems to come out of the blocks like a bullet every year. Certainly has for the last 2 years, and he's certainly come out the same way this year. And people have been disappointed 2 years in a row by him dropping off. Now, with Grant Birchall, obviously, you obviously watch Hawthorn games even closer than I do. It does seem to me that Birchall has not had nearly enough time put into him by opposition coaches. I mean, I think Matt DeBoer has had a terrible season so far. He let Brett Goods get away from him in the Bulldogs game, and he was the obvious matchup for Birchall, given obviously that Birchall had such a great start to the season. Where was DeBoer? Birchall just ran amok and didn't have anyone near him at all for the whole game. I just didn't understand what Ross Lyon was doing. Why is DeBoer not hanging off him like a limpet? Surely opposition coaches are going to spend a lot more time in the next month of the season, Molly, shutting down Grant Birchall because of the hurt factor that he has with his disposals.
Yeah, you would think that at some point that is coming, but it's a matter of if they can do it, because he has been very good taking the ball against, you know, the opposition kicks and the likes as well. He's averaging nearly, you know, 8 points higher in Supercoach and Dream Team at high levels. I think he's fourth on the list of point scorers or somewhere around there. So, you know, and this has been against good opposition. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles just let him run right as well. I mean, I couldn't understand. I mean, they have a few defensive forwards, but they just didn't play any of them on him. They just didn't give him. They just gave him a license to say you can run around the entirety of Subiaco and treat it as your own. They just paid no attention to him, and they got carved up as a result.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on with that. I haven't really looked across the league to see if there's any other backs that are getting off the hook, and maybe the tag forward is losing favour amongst coaches.
Mm.
But yeah, I just none of the teams really have done a big job on him, and he's got away. I mean, he's had 4 tons, including, you know, 150 last week. So I don't know whether he's a must-have if you haven't already got him. I guess he is. He's likely to, whatever happens, average around the top five, top seven backs. So, you know, it's a matter of what they do and what happens when a team does lock him down. Do they do it successfully? Does it affect their team worse because you can be put in some position to stop him, or does one of the other guys get away from them? You know, maybe it's a factor of Mitchell playing back a bit that, you know, you can't tag everyone.
I was looking at his draw coming up to the bye. Of course, Hawthorn had that round 11 bye. So the only dangerous taggers I could see in his immediate future are Petrenko from Adelaide in round 6. Petrenko also let Brett Goods get away from him in that game on the weekend. Probably the most dangerous is Jude Bolton, who restricted him to 13 touches in the grand final last year. Apart from that, Hawthorn have a really nice draw opening up, obviously, with GWS, Gold Coast and Melbourne, the three games leading up to the bye. So, The 4 week bye, that's right. So, well, they've had a tough first month, so maybe they'd need a month long holiday, Molly. I certainly do. But anyway, yes, leading up to the bye, it is a nice draw for the Hawthorn Football Club, and Birchall, if he can get over that Bolton roadblock, then certainly he's going to be averaging. Well, I mean, he's already almost locked to be the top averaging back over at least the first half of the season. I think it gets a bit tougher in the second half, but averaging 119.7 in Dream Team and 127 in Supercoach, those are good numbers. So ultimately the question is, Molly, is he a must get back? Because you're paying top dollar for him. You are paying 102 in Dream Team and 111 almost in Supercoach implied average. So he is scoring almost 20 over that in Dream Team and almost 17 over that in Supercoach. So is he still a bargain at this stage, even at his high price?
I don't think he's a bargain, but he's no worse than where he should average for the rest of the year. So his implied 100 is about where he should average from here on in. So, you know, you're not getting a bargain. You missed out on getting him 60K cheaper, but you're still getting a guy who's going to be one of the best backs in the league.
All right,
fantasy wise.
Now, the bloke you were referring to earlier, Taylor Durea, of course, he plays as a halfback, but he's classified as a mid in the virtual sports competitions we talk about, Dream Team and Supercoach. Does this cut him out of your consideration, or are you going to go for a bit of a homer pick this week?
Oh, look, I think I am going to go for a bit of a homer pick. I've liked his game so far. He, 56-73, that's pretty good.
Who is he keeping out of the side at the moment? Who is waiting in the wings to come back in?
Well, I mean, Lake's coming in now, but he'll come in for
Shoemakers.
Um,
I've only just got over crying about that injury.
Yeah, so I knew you would.
That's right.
I'm hoping you don't see the folly in your dislike or the likes for him. I'm just trying to pull up the injury list. So Sewell's got to come back. So that's a guy who would put pressure on him. Guerra is going to come back. And
Didn't he play the first week he played with Guerra in the side as well?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Now, does Dreyer, does his injection into the back line, has that actually released Burgoyne to play pure midfield? Because Burgoyne has been playing a fair bit of pure midfield this year.
Yeah, that's where I'm hoping that they see him as a guy who can hold down that spot in the back line and release some of the other guys, Hodge and the likes, to get forward a bit or get into the midfield a bit more. So I'm going to wait and see what happens at selection because, of course, he could miss out on the team. But I just have a feeling that he might be a nice pickup and score a few points. But then again, you know, I could be just very biased on that one.
And just to round out the Dreyer talk, so structurally, Osborne, was he playing forward or back on the weekend? He has been playing forward last year.
He did a bit of tagging on Fife, did he not?
Is that what that was? Right.
Yeah.
So he's not a threat to it. So, I mean, the reason I'm asking all these questions is to figure out what Dureau's job security is.
So he's more likely to be Osborne is more likely to be a forward tagger or forward. So
does that mean
I don't think he's a trouble for the half backer.
He was. Does that mean he releases Lewis to go into play pure midfield? Is that the
possibly?
Thing
possibly, yeah.
Now, just to round out the Hawk talk, I believe you have Bradley Hill in the gun this week. Yes. He looks like he's pretty much done as a cash cow.
Yeah, I did up until the news came out today that Brad Crouch had done a hammy, so he might get a reprieve, which I'm not too disappointed about because his break even's very doable, and I think he is a guy who could have a few, 70, 80, 90s in him. So just getting the right opponent on the right day, and he could do that. So I think he's, you know, there's a lot of talk about his fitness, and it's still unclear to me whether he did blow up in the first game or got a knock. There's a lot of people saying it was blown up, but he did look a little bit lame the first week. So I think he can run out of game now, and it's just a matter of will he be one of those rookie mid-price players that you're just about ready to trade and then they put in a good one. So I'm personally going to hope for that this week.
Mm. On the Fremantle side of that game, Molly, those who stuck fat with Nick Subin after his 40s in both competitions against Essendon, those who might have got sucked in by the ton and near ton in the first game against the Eagles, he was subbed off in, I believe it was the second quarter, after having two possessions, and of course Coach Ross Lyon was asked about that, I believe, at halftime, and he said, well, just he wasn't getting the ball, so we subbed him off. So is there any lesson we can learn as fantasy coaches about this? It seems like to me like this is just unprecedented. I have barely heard of a sub being made that early for a player just because he wasn't getting the ball. I mean, is this a Ross Lyon special? Do we need to fear him that if a player is not going to be, that doesn't come out of the blocks like a freight train, then he might actually get subbed off under the Lyon regime?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because maybe they just didn't want to let on about an injury. Maybe, you know, he wasn't doing the team things or something, and that's why he got put out. But yeah, no, I don't think we need to worry about it too much because I think you'll get burnt if you keep making trades in the second quarter. I think that's a bit too early to be taking that risk. So
making subs, you mean. Yes.
Well, taking the risk of subbing a guy out in the second quarter, you know, because you leave yourself open to an injury later on and then you'll have no one else to blame but yourself. Now, what did he score down there in Launceston? What would Hutto say he scored?
I can't remember what Hutto said, but he
scored. Feeding your line. 13!
Indeed, yes. Also, at Frio there in that game, Molly, Michael Johnson, of course, I mean, I'm not sure whether Michael Johnson without Luke McFarlane is a viable fantasy option because he had to play on Roughhead. He had to go to Roughhead, obviously, after McFarlane was a late withdrawal with concussion from the previous week. Now, his break-even is over 100 in both competitions. Now, we're talking probably more specifically about Dream Team in this case. He has a break-even which he's probably not going to get to. He has scored two sub-50s in both competitions so far this year. If you had been holding on to him, I mean, you might have been enthused by the Essendon score of 84 and 107 in respectively. Is now the time to cut your losses and get rid of Michael Johnson? Because I'm not sure McFarlane is going to come back this week. But even if he does, Johnson's score is going to plummet, you would think. He has Richmond this week, so you would expect a lot of attention to be paid to their tall forwards because they have three pretty good ones at the moment. Can you afford to wait until the Gold Coast week, the game the week after, or is now the time to get rid of Michael Johnson?
Yeah, unless you've got more concerns elsewhere, it's definitely a good week to be getting rid of him, I would have thought. As we said, sort of looking elsewhere in the back, so maybe you're still going to have enough money to upgrade him to someone else or downgrade him to a back rookie. So, yeah, I think it's time to move him. I have heard some talk that, sort of going the next step down the line, that with the young guy, was it Tanner Smith?
Tanner Smith, that's right.
Yeah, with his, solid performance, that perhaps what Fremantle might try and wing with is, with Pav out now, go with McFarlane up forward and roll the dice on that one.
That'd be even worse for Johnson's numbers. Yeah, that's a bad one. All right, on the Richmond and Collingwood game on the Saturday, of course, I believe we talked last week about Ricky Petters, and I was certainly negative about him. I'm not sure whether you were, Molly, but he delivered a sub-50 score in both competitions in that game and had to play. A lot of the Richmond numbers were down. I mean, we talked about Dustin Martin last week, and he put in another shocker, and there were a lot of players in the same boat from a fantasy perspective. Shane Tuck, the most notable among those, of course, who got subbed off. Didn't seem to be injured. He just had his head in his hands on the sidelines, and pretty much every Richmond fan pretty much had their head in their hands by the end of it. Especially if they were anywhere near about 500 metres near a TV showing the press red for Ed video, because that was just shocking. Anyway, if you are looking for a sideways trade, Molly, for Petty, do you want to get out of that situation and you are looking for a forward who is priced about the same, you need look no further than another player for the Richmond Football Club who was on the bubble this week, which is Chris Knights. Now, he has delivered a couple of 70s he's delivered a 73 in the Bulldogs game where they smashed it, and he delivered a 71 in the Collingwood game where Richmond got smashed. So that, to me, is a good sign that Knights' role is not necessarily dependent on how the rest of the team is going, and for a team like Richmond, that is a very good asset to have as a fantasy player. I would have thought if he can deliver 70s every week, given he is priced at 50 in Dream Team, I'm not sure this is necessarily a super coach. The same thing for Supercoach, because he did a little worse in Supercoach on the weekend with a 55 after a 75 in the first week. So it might be a Dream Team only thing, but if you are looking for that sideways trade, are you looking, I suppose that is the question, I suppose. If you have petted and you don't like the look of his role going forward, would you go sideways to a Chris Knights, or are you looking for a Sam Mays, someone who is rookie priced and will deliver you the maximum amount of cash injection, but he might be less reliable than someone like Knights?
Yeah, I personally am a trade down to the rookie type guy in most situations like that where I don't have the money to go to a premium. But it is very interesting that the two guys are so closely linked and have that price, the points difference. It would make sense to move from one to the other. And that would you know, not cost you too much. In fact, it would be about the same. And yeah, you know, Knights has that history of scoring in the 80s and low 80s to mid 80s. So, you know, if he can get anywhere back near that, and it's going to be tough for him. But yeah, if you get anywhere near that, then you've made some nice money and have a reliable player for a few weeks until you can get him out to a premium.
Yep. On the Collingwood side of that game, Travis Cloke, we need to talk about him again, Molly, I'm afraid, because he is knocking on the door of the top six fantasy forwards for the year. Now, I believe it was also highlighted on Footy Classified that, and this is something I was screaming at the TV while I was watching that game, Molly, where was Troy Chaplin, third man up, to kill the contest between Cloke and Rance? I mean, people were criticising Rance all up and down for getting beaten one-on-one by Cloke. Most players get beaten one-on-one by Cloke. I mean, you'd have to be an absolute gorilla. You'd have to be King Kong size not to get beaten one-on-one by Travis Cloke when he's on. That is what Chaplin's role is supposed to be. He's supposed to be the man coming across and playing the Nick Maxwell slash Luke Hodge or Josh Gibson, I suppose, or the Corey Enright or the Daniel Cross, that sort of role, the third man zoning off the other forward. And Chaplin was just nowhere. He was reactive. He was not, you know, going to those contests, and I'm not sure we can blame Rance for that. But nevertheless, that's just in passing, that analysis, because, of course, I have been burned by Troy Chaplin before, Molly. I'm sorry, I'm still angry about that. But anyway, getting back to Travis, he is putting in tremendous steps towards his claim for being a top six fantasy forward, and this is a bit like the Birchall situation. Is it going to continue? I mean, some teams seem to have worked out Travis Cloke, and some teams seem to have no answer to him altogether. His draw coming up, of course, he does play Essendon this week, and we are going to have a test of the media, the highly media hyped Carlisle, who I presume will play on him this week. We'll see how good he is one-on-one. But looking at Collingwood's draw, it's about even. He's probably, you know, he's got the Swans and the Cats in his near future, and Frio. But he's got a lot of spud teams as well. So, I mean, I'm not sure we can look at his draw and draw any conclusions. He is the player who, if you're going to get him in now, you would presumably be getting him in as a keeper. Is he going to be a top six forward keeper, Molly? And thus, is now the time to get him because he's going to be as cheap as he will be for the whole year?
I think he can go very close to being top six forward. But, he's looking quite good and taking marks and the likes. In the one glove, which is, I actually heard an interesting thing that, and I don't know how reliable the source was, that it's probably going to be about round 9, 10 or 11 that he's going to be asked to remove that glove. So whether that will affect him or not is yet to be determined. But he's definitely clunking those marks and kicking quite straight. So, you know, if anyone's looking for a forward who could possibly be in the top six, he's definitely one candidate, and whether he can keep it going or not is going to be hard to say.
All right, and also at Collingwood, what would you say, Molly, if I threw these three numbers at you, which have been bandied around a lot this week? 171, 171, and 187. What do you recognise those numbers as being?
I'm not really sure.
They are the last three Dream Team scores by Dane Swan against Essendon. And they have been bandied about a lot by fantasy coaches this week. So the question is, do you think that, you know, Swan is heading for a fall in the Anzac Day game? The last two Anzac Day games he has gunned it. And, of course, as I said, the last three he has scored 170-plus in these games. Is he an absolute lock captain? You forget about it, just don't worry about it, about any sort, other sort of analysis? Or can you see anyone else getting near what he will get tomorrow?
There's always a little bit of doubt, but he's as good as anyone you would have thought, especially on Anzac Day, and especially with the, assuming you leave yourself open to it, you know, you have the opportunity to do the lockout trick on it. Do we not this week?
That's true.
As long as you don't get burnt like some people did in Supercoach. You would have been over that one with the people having
someone... That's right. There was a late in with McCaffrey, I believe, was the late.
McCaffrey, yeah. Yeah. So
some people got him as a captain score because people were playing the loophole game. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and he was the only guy who was available to a lot of teams. So he was in the side as the... And, yeah, anyway. Mm. But, I think Swan's as good as anyone for captaincy. Could he be derailed? Absolutely, anyone can, but I don't. I don't think there's any too much to worry about for him this week.
All right, we'll move on to the St Kilda Essendon game, and I mentioned this bloke only because he is, I believe, the only genuine boy on the bubble in the backs this week, Nathan Wright. He was looking like he was going to get nothing at all this week. He eventually ended up 18 and 15 in both competitions. I believe he was 3 at half time. So I presume we can ignore him given... I mean, he did score 60s against GWS, but of course that was GWS. He's got Sydney this week, who do tend to deflate scores. So where do you see Wright's average settling at, Molly? It'll be somewhere between that 69 and 18, but I presume it'll be on the lower side of that.
Yeah, I would have thought he would be on the lower side of it. Averaging 30 to 40. So, yeah, I think he's probably one we can wait a little bit longer and see what becomes available in the backs.
All right. And on the other side of that game, Molly, I gave the star to Michael Hibberd. That it could have gone to 3 or 4 players, but he is a player who, if you look at his numbers, he has been... I suppose this is the first DT ton of the year, and he's still a little bit underpriced. His implied average is only 76 on his price, and he has been averaging 87, and of course got 113 on the weekend. Pretty much the same story in Supercoach. He's priced at 87, but he's been averaging 98 and got 109 on the weekend. He's actually been increasing in score each week in the Supercoach. So I'm not sure whether we can call him a Supercoach special. He probably does score more in that competition, but certainly he is a low standard deviation player. He does seem to be fairly consistent. He's not getting any forward tags because I'm not sure he's rated all that much as being all that having as much hurt factor as a lot of the other players. Obviously, Goddard would be the main one they'd be looking at as a forward tagging target. So is Hibberd the odd man out here who is not going to get as much attention and is going to be quietly, you know, getting somewhere near the top six backs this year?
Yeah, he could. I mean, I like him. He has been known to run close to the midfield. So, yeah, I think he could be, you know, in the next tier under the real solid gold premiums. He could be there fighting to get into that list or thereabouts. So, you know, you'd have to do it carefully, but, you know, he could be a player to consider in that back line if you're looking for a lower-priced premium in that case.
Mm. All right. On to the West Coast and Carlton game, and I've listed Scott Selwood and Luke Shuey, but I could have pretty much put the entire West Coast midfield, or I mean, obviously Lacroix be another one of these, but or Cox or Darling, Hearn, obviously. So you can name a bunch of these fantasy relevant West Coast players, and I named them all, I suppose, because the West Coast draw is really soft coming up to the bye, Molly. They've got Port this week, so I suppose it depends on whether you rate Port's start to the season and whether you think they're actually going to turn up for that game, as they have obviously in the first half of the season, in the first month of the season. So whether you think that's a good matchup for fantasy purposes or not. And then obviously after that, it's the Dogs, the Lions, the Roos, GWS, Richmond, St Kilda leading up to the bye. That is an excellent draw. You could hardly get anything better after obviously the Port matchup. So players like Selwood and Maston and Lacroix has obviously got his first DT ton of the year. Shuey didn't get tagged as much as he had in previous weeks, and he managed a DT ton this week. Is now the time to get on board with these West Coast fantasy relevant players, even the premium ones, because their scoring is going to be so inflated going up to the bye?
Sorry. He could be someone who you look at with that draw coming up, and he has had a really good year last year, moving his average up and started to move it up again. So, you know, he had two tough games to start with the showdown. The Derby, and then against Hawthorn. So, you know, they were tough games, and then he had a field day against Melbourne, and then another good performance versus Carlton. So I think there is a chance there that he can average around that 100 points for the rest of the year. So whether you want to bring him in for a week or two or not, but, you know, to get a little bit of a price rise possibly, but and hope that he can start feasting out on some of those lower teams. But you also think that with Kerr starting to get up to full steam, and if Rosa and Embley can get their fitness back on track, that the midfield spots could be a bit more shared around.
I do wish Chris Maston was classified as a forward, because then I think a lot more people would be taking notice of him as a fantasy option. Unfortunately, that's not the case. He is classified as a centre. But yeah, I've been on record as being critical of Scott Selwood's fantasy upside because he does tag so much, but I feel like just in this, you know, 6 week period after probably the Port game, where he will probably figure out a tag on probably Boak or someone like Ebert. So after that game, he'll probably be able to wheel and deal like he did in that Carlton game. So I guess in the second half of the season, I don't expect these guys to be going nearly as well as they will over the next month and a half up to the bye. On the Carlton side of this, Molly, now this is the biggest question for me of the week, Molly, is Brock McLean. Now, he is another one of these players who you would not expect to be a fantasy premium, and it's a bit embarrassing to have to talk about Brock McLean, Molly. And if you get him into your team, then you feel a bit sheepish about telling your mates about it, because it's Brock McLean. He's not the most stylish footballer going around, and you want to have someone like a Hartlett or a Delidio or some flashy player like that, a Cochin, who everyone reckons is going to win a Brownlow. But Brock McLean's numbers, now you take away the game in which he was a sub in the round two game, which of course is rotating out of his price this week and has deflated his price down 63 grand in Dream Team and 70 grand in Supercoach. So this is the week to get him. He has put in two DT tons in and Supercoach tons in the last 2 weeks, and pretty much scored like those numbers in the second half of last year. So he's obviously had a quiet start to the season with those two depressed scores in the first 2 weeks, but he is scoring like he did in the second half of last year in the last 2 weeks against two very good sides in Geelong and the Eagles. He seems to me to be a fairly strong candidate for an upgrade this week if you're in the mood for a mid-upgrade, and I'm actually thinking of bringing him into my team, Molly. So are you going to laugh at me, or is Brock McLean actually a valid option?
I don't know whether he could be considered in that role or that sort of class. His break-even's mid-price. He should handle that okay. But, you know, it's a matter of whether he can keep those tons coming, and I'm not sure that he will be able to do it as such. I think that will be a problem for him.
I'm looking at his draw, so he's got Adelaide, Melbourne, St Kilda, Port, which I think is a decent draw in the next 4 weeks. And then the following 4 weeks, Lions, GWS, Essendon and Hawthorn leading up to the Carlton bye in round 13. So I'd say that is a slightly easy draw, not a hugely easy draw, but I think there's at least half of those games are games where you could easily get 120s, if not the 100s. So I mean, I suppose the balancing factor here is that he is only priced at 89 in Dream Team and 98 in Supercoach, so you're not getting that much of a discount on his price, but you are getting maybe 5 or 10 points in discount on his normal price. He's As I said, so if he can average that 100, you are getting his dream team price, as I said, 10 points under. But it's a matter of whether you want to pay the extra 50 grand and get someone like Boak or some of these other players. I mean, I'm in the position, like a lot of coaches this week, Molly, where I have so much money in the bank. I believe I have 780 grand in the bank in Dream Team, and it's almost a million in Supercoach because I've been downgrading all these mid-prices to rookies over the first month of the season. So I feel like I want to go bang. I want to upgrade these guys, and I don't necessarily want to blow it all on getting the roll gold premiums. I still want to get value for money. And if I'm looking for a player who is a mid-8, Brock McLean looks to me like a mid-8, and I'm getting a slight bargain here. It is still, I mean, I may be shortchanging myself, but he does look like value just at this stage, Molly.
Yeah, I'm not sure of that as such yet, because I think there's a chance he won't go on with the scores that he is. He's probably too big of a risk. In that sense, that he is going to average that score ongoing and isn't going to sneak back to the lower scores that he has scored before. So, you know, the amount of price that's there, it seems a bit risky to me.
All right, on to the Gold Coast Port Adelaide game, Molly. Now, Charlie Dixon is the player I want to speak about him, not necessarily because of anything he's doing, because he's obviously had a pretty good year so far. But Matthew Warnock is out for a couple of months, which is going to mean a bit of a rejigging of that tall back line. Of course, Warnock had been playing second back to Rory Thompson as the main back, and just in the last couple of weeks, Jack Hutchins has been playing the third back role. So there's going to have to be a rejigging. Obviously, they've had Sam Day, Stephen May, and in the forward line, who else am I thinking of?
Did you say Day?
So it's Day, May, and then it's the rotating ruckman. So it'll be Dixon rotating with Smith. So the question for me is, what do Gold Coast do with no Warnock there? Do they move Stephen May back to the back line, or do they move Dixon to rotate him through the back line? And then if he does rotate through the back line, then who rotates with him? Is it one of those deals where you either have Dixon in the ruck and Smith forward and May back, or Smith in the ruck and Dixon back and May forward? Mm. So it's a bit too complex maybe, but I'm just trying to figure out exactly where Dixon's role is going to change, if at all. The obvious option to me, or the easiest option, I suppose, would be for May to go back. But I feel like actually they get so little out of Sam Day offensively, he might actually be the better option to send into the back line. And I'm just hoping that the thinking of Bluey McKenna is to not to destroy Dixon's fantasy value, because there's actually a fair amount of fantasy coaches on Charlie Dixon at the moment. I believe it's 7% in 7% or thereabouts in both competitions. So this is actually fairly relevant. What is Dixon's going to change? What is Dixon's role going to be post the Warnock injury? Is it going to change at all, or what do you think McKenna's going to do?
I'd have to think that it probably won't. He has been playing first or backup ruck, so that's been good for his scoring and the likes. But I don't think there's enough value in him at the moment. You know, I don't think he's going to get close to top 14 even in the forward line. So, you know, I don't know, you know, the last two games against opponents he should do well against, and he didn't in Dream Team. I guess from a super coach point of view, there could be some value there and he could be someone to look at. But, yeah, whether he plays forward, rucks or back, I'm not sure that his scores will be good enough that it will warrant picking him up.
It's an interesting dilemma for his coaches, because they probably would have got on him after those two very good scores in the first 2 weeks against the Saints and the Swans, and he has delivered in Dream Team to middling scores, mid-60s in both competitions, and 77 and 103 in Supercoach, so maybe he's more of a Supercoach prospect long-term, but he does look like he's ridden the roller coaster to the top, and it's just a matter of whether you take the money and run. He has increased 50% to 60% $1,000 in both competitions, so that's an interesting dilemma for his coaches that they will be going through this week. Now, on the other side of that game, Molly, speaking of players who have increased in price, Justin Westhoff put in another very good game on the weekend. And I mean, just the ball seemed to fall his way. He just got a freeze he didn't deserve, and everything seemed to be going for Hoff, the Hoff and his owners, of course. So you look at his scoring. He, as I said, he is the second top scorer in the entire competition for Dream Team, and I think thereabouts in Supercoach as well. So he is now coming to the tougher part of his schedule. What do you expect him to do this week against the Eagles? I know his break-even is in the mid-40s in both competitions, so you would presume he's still got some cash to accumulate, but is the smart choice to actually get rid of him this week because his price rises have topped out?
No, I don't think that would be a good idea because you could be kicking yourself, although you should prepare yourself that perhaps this will be the week where someone gets control of him to a certain degree. But, yeah, I mean, he's popped out somewhat out of the blue, and I think a lot – I know myself, let's talk from myself point of view, was like – do you pick him or don't you? He's got a nice break even after two rounds and the likes. But, yeah, he's had a history of inconsistency. So it's going to be very hard not to think that he'll be inconsistent in this sort of aspect as well. So, you know, it is a matter of, yeah, getting the right guys in. And I don't know about Westhoff now. I think you've missed the boat on him, and if you haven't got him, and if you have got him, just ride him out until he proves you that he's going to put in a shocker.
So you reckon he's done enough to stay in his side until he actually fails, rather than prejudging it?
Or at least until his break-even really does push up to about where he's been scoring.
Yep, all right. Well, just on that note, I did notice a few coaches actually traded Jack Viney out last week, and they looked like geniuses this week. So there is a case to be made for presupposing on these things, and you do win. You do get occasional wins doing that, but obviously you do miss the boat occasionally with that strategy as well. Now, as we mentioned before, Westhoff at two and Kane Corns at one in the top scorers for the entire Dream Team competition. Now, he was doing this on the weekend while also doing a bit of a tagging role, Molly. So he has been doing that in a few of these games now.
He's back, baby.
Now, is he back? Because he's played the three worst sides in the competition in terms of giving up fantasy points for the opposition. And, of course, Adelaide, who are Port Adelaide's bunny side. So can we take what do you think Corns is going to average from here on through to the rest of the season? I mean, it's not going to be 129.8 in Dream Team and 141.5 in Supercoach. Where does it settle for the rest of the year, do you think?
I think he can average the 110 to 115 at least. So, I mean, that means there's probably some bad scores amongst it coming up. But, you know, this guy has been a very good fantasy player in the past, averaging, you know, quite a nice number to consider. So, you know, I think he can average about 105 to 115.
Now, do you think he's the sort of player who will get rested? I mean, are Port Adelaide the sort of team this year who are actually going to be in a position to say we're resting blokes because we want to save them from the finals? I mean, a Port a finals team?
Port a finals team? No, I wouldn't have thought so. I think they've had a good draw so far, and that's been part of it. And the first signs of them coming up against tough opposition is this week against West Coast, so... You know, I think Adelaide have been disappointing, plus it's the showdown, so it's a hard one to read it from. But apart from that, their opponents have been the bottom three from last year, and that's got to have helped them.
It's going to be such a fascinating game, that Port Adelaide and West Coast game. Who are you tipping in that game, Molly? Because that seems to be the hardest one to tip of the year so far.
Oh, I think I'm going to have to go West Coast as a team that's really got to get their season going.
Yeah, I'd go that way as well. But, I mean, it's very hard to resist that Port Adelaide momentum. I mean, but nevertheless, we had a team, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was 2010, where Brisbane won the first 4 games of the season and then, I believe, finished bottom 4 or thereabouts, just barely won a game for the rest of the season. Now, they did get a few injuries that year, but it does show you that 1 month is not a always the best guide for the performance in the rest of the season. So it'll be interesting to see whether Port can do what that Brisbane side of 2 or 3 years ago couldn't do and carry on with that good form. Now, I suppose we should also mention from Port Hamish Hartlett, because he has that injured game where he scored 30s in both competitions against GWS coming out of his price rotation this week. So in the other games, he's been scoring big tons in both competitions. So is he actually a little bit underpriced at the moment? He's priced at 83 in Dream Team and 96 in Supercoach. He's been averaging well above those in the games where he didn't get injured. But this is Hamish Hartlett, Molly. He gets injured. That's what he does. So he's Hamish injured Hartlett. That's his MO. Can we expect him to, A, play 22 games this year, and B, not get injured in any of them? That seems too much to hope for me.
Yeah, I would have thought it's a bit much to expect that to happen. So that is the case that you couldn't rely on it. But in saying that, he is, he has put up some good scores, and it's great to fanfare about him. So, just a poor score against the Giants. He could come up with it. And the other thing being, he's got back eligibility. So, averaging 90, or if you put down the Giants game as an aberration, then, getting him in would be worth it, because, although his average says 91, all by one game has been averaging, 108 or 9. Yep. To do it. So, he could definitely be top 6 back by the end of the year.
All right, on to the Melbourne Western Sydney game. Now, Jack Viney, I presume your advice, Molly, would be to get him out this week, because he may actually get rested this week. That's been the news from the media today, that he might get rested like Tumpus did this week. So that decision was probably made for us. But Michael Evans, he bobbed up with 3 goals in that 12-goal rout in the final quarter, and he is in a lot of teams this week, or at least he's in the a lot of plans this week for trades. He was in less than 0.5% of teams before this game, and he didn't do all that well in his first game, 58 and 48 against the Eagles. I get the feeling his reputation is being inflated by just this one. I mean, I think coaches are trading him in just because of the massive break-even, which is minus 105 in Dream Team and minus 95 in Supercoach. But I'm not sure he's going to last that long, Molly. I mean, I know he's got some... Again, I think the Melbourne's draw is actually pretty good. So the Lions this week, they got GWS in 3 weeks, and the Lions after that. So they've still got a few relatively competitive teams they could, or should say, teams they could be competitive against if they try hard enough. But Evans, I feel like I can bypass Evans and wait for another one, because there's a fair few coming down the line in the centres. Are you going to miss out on Evans, or are you going to get on that bandwagon?
Well, especially in Dream Team, I'm very seriously thinking of picking him up for that hit that is likely to come in his price change week to week. So I can pick him up without too much trouble. And so that may be something I consider doing. But
If you're picking him up, would you start him?
That's what I was about to go on and say, is that I think I'd be more likely to have him as the sub or the interchange, or you know, the lower of the interchange numbers.
Mm. All right, and just to round out the Melbourne talk, and I suppose we'll reach across to the GWS side of that game. If you're looking for a downgrade of Blikavs or whatever his name is from Geelong, Max Gawn is the candidate this week who obviously has just played the one game. He looked very good in that game and managed to get two goals in addition to all the ruck support he did to Jamar. Now, you could probably argue that that was a one-off wonder because, of course, they were playing GWS. But you look on the other side of that game, and we also had another rookie ruck who was playing his first game in Satanta O'Halpin. And I feel like with Satanta, I'm not necessarily getting... If I was going to get him in, which I may do, obviously we're probably looking another week to have a look at these guys. But I feel like I'd like to have Satanta in my side, Molly, just because he takes such joy in the game. He kicked five goals, and the celebrations, it was as if he just won the grand final in each and every one of those goals. And it just made me feel happy by looking at him. And I think that's an underrated asset for a fantasy player to have, is to make you feel good when you watch him and know that he's in your team. Does that sway you in any way? Are you looking at these guys with any degree of seriousness, or do you think their numbers are just so inflated because they were playing a ridiculously unique game in that game?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I mean, I'm not sure you would rely on Satanta to score, you know, three or four goals a week for you. You know, one or two maybe, but there's not a lot of else that's going to get them a lot of AP you wouldn't have thought. And who else was there? Max Gawn, you know, I've got some time for him, but, you know, I'm probably under the rule of trying to never trade from your rucks to especially make cash. And this is a lot of cash there, and I'm not sure that's the case at the moment.
I must say, I mean, Halpin's performance was pretty good on the weekend, but and I'm very wary these days of giving out spuds, but I'm just this side of giving Tom McDonald a spud. He has been pretty poor this week, this year, in a pretty poor side, admittedly, but even so, he has...
A drop away.
On to the Adelaide Western Bulldogs side. Now, Brad Crouch, you mentioned there, of course, he has been reported this today as hitting that 1 to 2 week hamstring at training. Hamstrings, Molly, normally take 3 weeks, and you would think they would probably not take any chances with a prospect as hot as young Crouch. Is now the time to get rid of him? And just, I mean, because there's so many of these centre rookies coming down the line. Evans, obviously, this week. Mays, there's so many, and obviously you've got McRae and Stringer coming next week, who we'll talk about in a second. But is it? I mean, you could actually get him in when he comes back in 2 or 3 weeks' time. So it's not as if you're going to miss out on that. So you could actually just make money in the meantime.
Yeah, I think that's, especially in Dream Team, that's definitely an option to take on board, is get him out now and bring him in later. So, you know, I think, and that assumes there's no one better, you know, in the weeks ahead. So, yeah, I think, you know, holding him would be okay, or trading him to someone who's always on, you know, who can get you some money now is also a normal way to go. So, you know, I think he put up a nice performance on the weekend, which makes it even more disappointing that he's out. But, you know, I think there's other options around.
All right, and also at Adelaide, Luke Brown. Now, we need to keep on talking about him until he doesn't play anymore, because he's obviously fairly fantasy relevant, and there has been a bit of an up-and-down season for him in his scoring. 35, 74, 16, 62 in Dream Team, and much the same story in Supercoach. But I feel like this is actually the week to trade him out, Molly, because he's got the Blues, who are notoriously bad at restricting the scoring of opposition small forwards, because, I don't believe Betts is back this week, but Garlett and Armfield and Robinson require a lot of attention from opposition small defenders. So that is why that when teams play, the Blues, their small defenders tend to not get a whole lot of the ball. So, and then, of course, you've got the Hawks in round six the week after, and that's that they also require a lot of attention, those small forwards at the Hawks. So I feel like Brown, with a break even in of the 32 in Dream Team and 42 in Supercoach, I could see him not making that or making thereabouts, somewhere pretty close to that. So I think this week might be the week to get rid of him, Ollie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against that idea either, but it just depends where your other problems are and who's the biggest problems that you think you've got, where you're going to where you're going to get someone better than him this point of the season. So maybe you hold on to him this week if you've got other guys in the centres and forwards who you want to pick up and see how it goes for a week.
All right, on the Bulldogs side now, Jackson McRae and Jake Stringer are not on the bubble this week. They, of course, played their first game this week, and Stringer, of course, coming off the subs bench, so not as relevant. But I'm not going to ask you about trading Jackson McRae in this week, but I suppose the question is, because he and Stringer are both of a significantly higher price because they were numbers 4 and 5, I believe, in the draft last year. Does that mean that when you're planning your trades, that you are planning not to get these guys because they cost another 50 or 60 grand over bargain basement rookie price, and thus you don't need to get these guys? I mean, you'd rather get someone like Evans this week who, you know, makes you more cash this week and then makes you more cash when they go up, rather than getting someone like McRae, who is probably a better player and might actually even score more, but then might not actually make as much money.
Yeah, and playing for the Bulldogs, you know, you could see them having some struggling games, and that's going to affect his scores as well. So I think guys like that around the peripheral might be worth dropping them out or avoiding them altogether.
Yep. I was going to, as far as the North Melbourne Brisbane game, I was going to talk about Taylor Heim, but I don't think I will, because he's break even though he's on the bubble this week, and his price is a little too high, and his break even is not low enough, I don't think, to talk about him. So we'll finish off with the Brisbane side, Molly, and the news came through just as we were going to air that Daniel Rich was out for 8 weeks with a shoulder. Now, I presume that means that Simon Black is going to come in and pretty much play the same role. So does that mean anything for the Brisbane midfield structure? And I suppose the fantasy-relevant player we need to talk about in relation to this is Dane Zorko. Is Zorko, is his role going to change with Rich not being there? Is he going to get less supply or more responsibility? What is it? What changes there?
Yeah, I'd be pretty worried about it at the moment. And, you know, his break-even's quite high still. So, you know, have a look at it for a week and see what they do with him. But, yeah, he looks it looks like there's, you know, some things going on there with him that he's having some second-year blues, and perhaps what the issues that kept him out of the game from being brought straight in might be showing their heads again. So, you know, he needs to complete some good training sessions, and hopefully he can get back to his old form.
All right. And finally, Sam Mays. Now, I feel like he is a player who everyone needs to get into their team. I mean, I'm even thinking, with obviously the money that I've got in my kitty in both competitions, I'm thinking of double upgrades. But Sam Mays is calling to me, Molly. Brisbane have got a kid who they hoped Jared Pollock would be a year or two ago, and Mays seems to be the real deal. Pollock was a disappointment, but Mays seems to be the one who is actually going to fulfil that promise of the outside run that the Lions have been screaming out for, and someone who can actually deliver the ball inside 50 with some quality. And I'm not sure he has a two-way running game, which obviously the Brisbane midfield have all got smashed in the media about this week, because, of course, they keep on getting smashed in Melbourne and getting exposed for being only one-way runners. But anyway, as far as Mays goes, his job security looks rock solid to me, and his outside game means that he's not going to be involved in as many contests, so his propensity to get injured is going to be lower. He looks like a roll gold cash cow to me, Molly. Can you see any downside to him at all?
Not a lot. I saw him play in his first game, I think it was, and he looked really good. So, you know, he's going to have the ups and downs of a rookie, but I think he's going to be able to ride them about as well as anyone, to be honest.
Yep. I mean, look, I'm going to have to make that decision about whether I keep that money in the bank, but of course it is burning a hole in my pocket. That's the phrase we use in fantasy football. But anyway, as I said, so thank you to everyone who comes onto the chat, and I believe we'll be doing another similar competition next week for another Capstar cap. So if you are lacking a cap and you want to look like Mitch Robinson, who does like those new era caps, Molly, there's a reason they call him IQ, and that's because he is a very smart looking man wearing those new era caps. That's as modeled by Mitch Robinson. Anyway, that'll be it for us this week on the Coach's Box. Thank you for everyone on the chat, as I said, for staying up and keeping us company. And thank you to you, Molly.
Thank you, Monty. And we should say, Fan Footy had a bit of a makeover this week, and it's looking very, very nice.
A little bit of a makeover. Well, there was a new menu there, but it doesn't look as good in Firefox at the moment. I've still got some bugs to work out, but nevertheless, it will be looking a little bit better, hopefully over the course of the week, and hopefully I'll have something big to announce next week, which got delayed a bit from last week, but that is still in the train, and it is coming down the turnpike. All right, as I said, that is it for this week on the Coach's Box. We'll see you guys next week.
Okay, bye everyone.